Welcome to the debate. So why does a supposedly miraculous cancer drug, right, one that cures certain patients completely, just fail absolutely in like 97% of people with cholangiocarcinoma?
Yeah, it's a staggering number.
It is. Are the tumors inherently invisible to our bodies, or is our immune system just, well, too exhausted to fight?
I mean, it is one of the most pressing biological mysteries in oncology right now. We are looking at these therapies that harness their body's own immune system.
Right. Immunotherapy.
Exactly. Drugs that have completely revolutionized how we treat melanoma, lung cancer, but then they hit an absolute brick wall when it comes to the bile ducts.
Which brings us to the foundational writings of Steve Holmes, the founder of Cholangio.org. We're going to be examining his incredibly detailed analysis of immunotherapy in cholangiocarcinoma.
Yeah, and it's a vital text. He forces us to look really closely at the tumor microenvironment to define exactly what makes a tumor cold, meaning, you know, the immune system just ignores it, and what makes it hot or visible and under attack.
Right. And his work is so crucial because it strips away all those surface-level clinical observations, right? It dives directly into the actual cellular mechanisms.
Mm-hmm. It asks us to interrogate the root cause of why the immune system fails to intervene when these specific cells mutate.
Exactly. And that is the core disagreement we're exploring today. Is the primary barrier to treating these cold cholangiocarcinomas a fundamental structural lack of genetic visibility from the tumor's inception? Or
is it the result of profound progressive immune exhaustion, right, stemming from chronic environmental injury?
Precisely. I will argue that treatment success is dictated by binary structural biology. So tumors are either built with massive, visible genetic errors from the start, or they are not.
And I will argue that characterizing the vast majority of these tumors as merely invisible completely obscures the biological reality, which is that they result from severe immune exhaustion and chronic cellular damage.
Okay, well, let me ground my perspective in a really fundamental principle that Steve Holmes asserts, which is the cure is in the cause.
Right.
When we look at the biological cause of cholangiocarcinomas, we see a strict structural divide in the DNA. Most of these tumors are considered cold because the mutations driving them are just scattered.
Scattered, yeah.
They're small, they're unrelated, and uncoordinated. The biological term here is tumor mutational burden, or TMB.
Right, TMB.
In most cholangiocarcinomas, the TMB is simply too low. The structural errors just do not cross the threshold required to actually trigger an immune alarm.
But viewing those mutations purely as a mathematical threshold, I mean, that completely ignores how they developed in the first place.
Well, I see why you think that, but let me give you a different perspective on the fundamental architecture of the cell. Contrast that low mutational burden with the roughly, 2.5% of tumors on the DMMR pathway?
Deficient mismatch repair.
Right, deficient mismatch repair. In this tiny subset, the genetic repair system completely fails from the very beginning. It is a systemic collapse of the cell's proofreading mechanism.
Sure, the proofreader is broken. And this failure leads to massive, uncorrected structural errors and highly abnormal protein sequences. The tumor is visibly defective from its inception. Therefore, my position is that immunotherapy is entirely dependent on this pre-existing structural visibility. But I challenge that. I challenge the concept of quiet or invisible tumors as passive entities. If we draw directly from Holmes's explanation of how cholangiocarcinoma begins, we have to look at the environment of the epithelial cells lining the bile ducts.
Okay, the bile ducts.
These cells sit in an incredibly hostile, toxic environment. They are constantly subjected to chemical stress from bile acids. And these acids act like biological detergents, literally stripping cell membranes.
It is a toxic environment, sure, but the body is adapted to handle that continuous flow of bile.
It is adapted to repair it, yes, but that constant repair requires constant inflammation. Injury is a normal part of their function, but, and this is the critical factor Holmes points out, repetition.
Right.
The immune system is constantly responding to this chronic injury. Over decades of localized inflammation, the immune system becomes physically overwhelmed.
But
wait, let me finish. T cells, The body's primary attackers are flooded into the bile ducts for years. Because the injury is relentless, these T cells eventually change physically to protect the body from autoimmune damage. They become exhausted.
Okay, but...
It is only when the immune response falls behind this constant chemical weathering that the damage breaches the inner sanctuary of the cell, enters the nucleus, and corrupts the genes. So my conclusion is that the boundary between cold and hot tumors is not simply about genetic visibility.
Then what is it?
It is a profound failure of immune endurance. The immune response loses a decades-long war of attrition long before the mutations even have a chance to accumulate into a strong genetic signal.
Okay, let's test that idea of immune endurance against Holmes' concept of the city of cells.
Sure.
He uses this model to describe a cold tumor as a city where a gathering of mutated cells forms, but every cell is quiet. Each cell carries a different mutation type spread out randomly, right? Creating only a small disruption in the overall system.
Right.
Functionally, they are invisible. Think about it this way. It's like a neighborhood where every house has a slightly different minor code violation. One house has a cracked window. Another has weeds in the yard. Another has a loose gutter.
Okay.
No city inspector is going to view this as a systemic crisis. They do not pull the municipal fire alarm for a loose gutter. The lack of response isn't because the inspector is exhausted from years of working.
Well,
it's because the structural threshold for an emergency simply hasn't been met. The architecture of the genetic damage is too disjointed to trigger the system's surveillance mechanisms.
See, I come at it from a different way, because we have to look at what preceded the broken windows and the loose gutters in that neighborhood.
Which is what?
It isn't just a city of minor violations. It's a city where the emergency responders have been deliberately suppressed by a decades-long state of low-level chronic inflammation.
Mm.
The text is very explicit about the biological sequence of events. The damage only reaches the genes because the immune system becomes physically exhausted from repeated injury.
But the resulting mutations themselves are still minor. A weak immune system doesn't change the fact that the tumor lacks a unified target.
They are minor, but they are the result of an immune failure, not the cause of the immune blindness.
I don't follow.
The cell does not fully recover from the chemical stress of the bile acids. The immune response falls behind, and only then are the instructions inside the nucleus damaged. Daughter cells carry those low-level mutations forward.
Right.
You are looking at the end state, the quiet city, and saying, look, there's no structural signal here to respond to. I am looking at the biological timeline and saying, the alarm system was burnt out by constant grinding environmental stress before the structural damage even had a chance to occur.
That's an interesting point, though. I would frame it differently. Even if we accept that environmental exhaustion plays a role in allowing the initial damage to reach the nucleus,
which it does,
the fundamental biological truth of the resulting cancer remains. Once those mutations happen, they are uncoordinated. They don't combine to create a strong signal.
Well,
so when we ask why the immune system doesn't react to the fully formed tumor, it is because the tumor fails to present a unified target. It's a fundamental issue of mutational load. You can have the most energetic, rested, pristine immune system in the world, but if the tumor is constructed of cells carrying low-level, completely different mutations, immune surveillance will not establish control. It just flies entirely under the radar.
But wait, if the tumor is truly invisible, like you say, then why do we see patients with high levels of PD-L1?
Aha.
This directly impacts how we measure immune engagement. If the tumor is flying completely under the radar, the exhaustion model challenges your structural model on the very existence of these biomarkers.
I'm really glad you brought up PD-L1 because the interpretation of that specific protein is central to Holmes' analysis at Calanjo.org. He lays out a strict rule, right? Three conditions must perfectly align for immunotherapy to work.
Right.
First, the tumor must be visible, meaning it must produce abnormal peptides on the cell surface. Second, the immune system must be physically present. T cells must have infiltrated the tumor.
Yes.
And third, the response must be blocked, meaning the PD-1 break is actively engaged.
The critical alignment required for checkpoint inhibitors to function. Exactly.
And I'm not convinced by that line of reasoning, because without the first condition, the structural visibility, The other two are entirely irrelevant. Let's explain how this mechanism works. T cells have a receptor called PD-1.
Right.
Think of it as a security guard checking for identification. Tumor cells can express a protein called PD-L1, which acts like a fake ID badge.
A very effective fake ID.
Exactly. When the guard scans the fake ID, a single tells the T cell to stand down and not attack. Now, doctors measure PD-L1 levels to see if the tumor is actively applying this break. But Holmes notes that removing the break, taking away the fake ID, does absolutely nothing if there is no strong underlying antidiminal response.
But
therefore, without the massive genetic errors creating abnormal alien-looking peptides for the immune system to recognize in the first place, PD-L1 expression is functionally meaningless for predicting immunotherapy success.
I'm sorry, but I just don't buy that. Let me tell you why. You are treating PD-L1 strictly as a binary mechanical switch, right? Like a fake ID that is either protecting a tumor from a massive attack or doing absolutely nothing.
Because structurally, that's what's happening.
But Holmes explicitly warns us about relying on PD-L1 as a simplistic indicator. He points out that PD-L1 can be triggered by widespread inflammation without any strong tumor recognition at all. Or it appears when T cells are present but fundamentally weak.
Which heavily supports my point that measuring it is meaningless without a structurally visible tumor generating an attack.
It doesn't mean it's meaningless. It means it's an indicator of a vastly more complex, degraded microenvironment. If PD-L1 is showing a break engaged by generalized tissue inflammation rather than a targeted tumor attack, or if it's engaged by exhausted T cells fighting a losing battle against bile toxicity, then we are fundamentally misunderstanding the tumor by treating it as an on-off switch.
I mean,
the presence of PD-L1 in a cold tumor isn't just a disconnected mechanism. It is the chemical footprint of a long failing war. It tells us the immune system physically tried to act but was subjected to chronic injury. Dismissing PD-L1 in cold tumors as just a lack of structural visibility completely ignores the profound physiological exhaustion that Holmes highlights.
Okay. I'll grant you that chronic inflammation creates a messy microenvironment, but we have empirical evidence of what happens when true structural visibility is present.
Okay.
Let's look at the specific genetic pathway where removing that PD-L1 break actually results in dramatic, enduring responses. The DMMR tumors.
The 2.5% of patients where immunotherapy actually succeeds?
Yes, and the deep biology here perfectly illustrates why profound structural breakdown is the absolute prerequisite for therapeutic success. Inside the cell's nucleus, you have the mismatch repair system, the MMR.
Right.
Its role is to find errors, fix them, and keep the DNA sequence stable as it's copied. You have a detection team of proteins, specifically the genes MSH2 and MSH6, that they slide along the DNA strand, feeling for structural bulges where the genetic letters don't pair up correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have a repair team, MLH1 and PMS2, that cuts out the error and patches it.
A highly efficient biological proofreading system.
Exactly, a biological proofreader. But in DMMR, deficient mismatch repair, one of these crucial genes is permanently lost or switched off. The proofreading process completely breaks down. Errors accumulate rapidly.
And this leads to?
This leads to a condition called microsatellite instability, or MSI-high, where the repetitive sections of DNA become completely unstable. But the most crucial part of Holmes' analysis is exactly what kind of errors form. We aren't talking about small, quiet changes anymore. We are talking about frameshift mutations.
Right, the moment the entire genetic reading frame shifts.
Yes, DNA is read in triplets, groups of three letters called codons. And Holmes uses this fantastic linguistic analogy for this. Imagine the DNA sequence reads, "The cat ate the rat."
Okay.
A frameshift mutation deletes a single letter, say the C in cat. The reading frame shifts, and suddenly the sequence becomes diata tet her at. T-H-E space A-T-A.
It makes no sense.
Exactly. The letters are mostly there, but the structure is fundamentally destroyed. The meaning is entirely lost. When the cell tries to translate this broken, frameshifted DNA into proteins, it doesn't just make a slightly altered protein. It produces literal biological garbage.
Right.
These resulting protein fragments, called peptides, are displayed on the surface of the cell. Because the DNA is totally disrupted, these peptides look violently abnormal. They are alien to the body.
They are.
The immune system has never seen them before and cannot ignore them. This mechanism proves my position. True therapeutic success with checkpoint inhibitors requires the fundamental destruction of the cell's normal operating instructions. You need that undeniable alien target.
That is a very compelling argument, but have you considered the inherent tragedy embedded in Holmes' analysis of this exact mechanism?
What tragedy? The mechanism clearly works for those patients.
The tragedy that seeing is not the same as destroying. You just painted a highly accurate picture of a tumor that is a blazing genetic beacon, practically begging the immune system to destroy it because it is covered in alien proteins. And yet, what does the DMMR tumor do?
Well,
even with massive frameshift mutations, even with widespread MSI-high instability, the tumor actively adapts. As the immune system recognizes the alien proteins and T-cells swarm in to attack, the tumor increases its PD-L1 production. It actively utilizes that fake ID badge to engage the PD-1 receptor on the T-cells and force them to stand down.
Which is precisely why immunotherapy works so beautifully here. The drug physically blocks that specific interaction between PD-1 and PD-L1, allowing the swarm of T-cells to resume their attack on the alien proteins.
Yes, but look at what that biological behavior represents. It demonstrates that even the most highly visible tumors are highly active immune evaders. They aren't just passively sitting there being structural targets due to a broken proofreader. They are dynamically suppressing the immune system in real time.
I mean,
if a tumor with massive frameshift mutations still has to rely on active immune suppression to survive, it proves that the interaction with the immune system is the defining characteristic of the cancer, not just the static genetic code itself. The cancer is an active negotiator in its environment.
But it can only negotiate because it has leverage. The immense structural visibility is what forces the interaction in the first place. In a cold tumor, there is no negotiation because there's no recognition. Let's trace the logic of the three conditions again.
Okay.
If the tumor is structurally visible and the immune system is present, but the brake is engaged, the tumor is visible but protected. Immunotherapy removes the protection, allowing the existing attack to finish the job. If you do not have that frameshift-driven visibility from the start, you are just removing a brake on a parked car.
Right, but?
The DMMR pathway is the exception that proves the rule. Cholangiocarcinoma is profoundly difficult to treat precisely because the vast majority of cold tumors do not naturally become visible over time. You cannot force a cold tumor to become hot by merely blocking PD-1.
I agree that you cannot simply force a cold tumor hot by giving a patient a checkpoint inhibitor to block PD-1. I agree with that, but I fundamentally reject the conclusion that this makes the structural mutation the only factor that matters.
Okay,
let's return to the bile ducts. If a patient's tumor is cold, Holmes' work at Cholangio.org makes it abundantly clear that it developed in an environment where detection was limited and early growth caused few symptoms. Time became the tumor's greatest advantage.
Right.
Why? Because the immune system was entirely consumed by dealing with the relentless flow of bile, the intense chemical stress, and the constant cellular turnover. The T cells in that microenvironment aren't just passively ignoring a low mutational signal. They are physically exhausted from years of responding to non-cancerous tissue damage.
So your position is that the microenvironment itself is the primary barrier rather than the genetic code of the tumor sitting inside it?
I am suggesting they cannot be artificially separated, but the environment drives the biological outcome. You are looking at a cold tumor and saying, it doesn't have frameshift mutations, therefore it fails immunotherapy.
Because it does.
I am looking at the exact same tumor and saying it developed in a chronic wound. The immune system is physically incapable of mounting a sustained response because it has been locked in a state of chronic inflammation for a decade. The T cells have permanently upregulated their inhibitory receptors just to survive the toxicity of the bile duct.
Wow.
That is why Holmes' point about interpreting biomarkers is so vital. When oncologists look at testing results, things like TMB, MSI-high, or PD-L1, they are looking for signs that the system is aligned for treatment. If PD-L1 is high but it's just reflecting local tissue inflammation rather than an active tumor attack, treating the patient with a drug that removes the break is ignoring the reality of the chronic injury that built the tumor in the first place.
You know, if we accept that premise, it really highlights the immense danger of viewing genetic biomarkers in clinical isolation.
Exactly. They are moving parts of the same degraded ecosystem. You cannot treat the genetics without addressing the exhaustion of the organ itself.
Right. Well, to summarize my position based on Steve Holmes' detailed analysis, the text powerfully demonstrates that the success of immunotherapy treatments in cholangiocarcinoma is entirely contingent on a structural genetic failure from the very beginning.
Right.
The DMMR pathway, while representing a tiny fraction of patients, proves a fundamental rule of biology. Without profound DNA instability, specifically without the frameshift mutations creating undeniably alien proteins for the immune system to target, removing the immune breaks achieves nothing. The barrier to curing this disease is at its core an issue of genetic architecture and mutational load.
And to summarize my perspective, while DMMR certainly provides the perfect biological target for immune therapies, focusing solely on the structural genetics ignores the profound environmental context of the disease.
Mm-hmm.
The development of cold tumors reveals a complex biological narrative of chronic chemical injury, relentless inflammation, and eventual total immune exhaustion. Recognizing that these tumors are the end result of a long war of attrition against bile toxicity is absolutely crucial for understanding why the immune system fails to detect them and why simple binary switches fail the vast majority of patients.
It is a remarkably deep piece of work by Steve Holmes, and it truly illuminates the immense complexity of the tumor microenvironment. Looking at cholangiocarcinoma not just as a static genetic mutation, but as an ongoing dynamic interaction between cellular damage and immune surveillance, it changes how we must think about future treatments.
It really does. It forces the medical community away from simplistic silver bullet thinking and demands that we engage with the actual harsh biology of the disease. I highly recommend anyone dealing with this complexity, whether you're a patient, researcher, or clinician, delve deeper into the resources at cholangio.org to explore how these biological concepts translate to patient care.
We will leave it to our listeners to weigh these perspectives, but it brings us back to the fundamental question. Whether you are dealing with a massive, alarm-triggering failure of a cell's DNA proofreading system or the slow, silent, exhausting depletion of the body's immune defenders over a decade, the result is a devastating cellular evasion. Understanding the true biological mechanism of that evasion is the only way we will ever learn to stop it.